Well, folks, what is the crack? It's Gareth McGlynn here, back with some pre-construction news. This time of year, I always get excited about advancing pre-construction, trying to put things in place for the trip. I'll be there from May 1st to May 3rd. I'm actually in on the Tuesday night, so if anybody's going and wants to meet up for a beer, I am pretty free. One of the things I wanted to let you know as well, don't know if you're aware, but the Pre-Construction Podcast, in partnership with Advancing Pre-Construction, is giving away a free ticket. Now, we want to give this ticket to an unsung hero within pre-construction and estimating. It's very simple. If you would like to nominate someone, or maybe you would like to nominate a team of people, that can be done as well. I'll put the link in the show notes below. What happens is everyone nominated will be going into a draw, and we will be announcing the winner. We'll probably announce it at the beginning of April to give them a chance to organize their accommodation and flights. So get involved in that. Really looking forward to advancing. Listen, back to today's guest. He is Pre-Construction Director and Diversity and Inclusion Council Member at Flinco. I've been chasing this man for a year, Clint Kimble, but I'm actually glad that I didn't get him last year, because this year he has two huge projects to talk about. One was the Arkansas Art Museum. It was 100,000 square foot expansion of an already world-class museum. The second one was the Walmart Home Office. Now, to give you an idea, there was seven general contractors involved in this project. It was a 350-acre campus. It looks incredible. Basically, Flinco and Clint was responsible for the whole health fitness center and the food hall and 10 parking decks. So he goes into detail about running those two projects hand in hand, the complexities, the issues. He also discussed the importance, and these are two topics that he's going to be discussing at Advancing Pre-Construction, the importance of having a high quality training program when it comes to estimators. And the second one is early procurement, and he talks in detail and specifically about the Walmart project as well and the lessons learned there. Well, listen, I hope you enjoy it. As always, folks, let's hear from our two sponsors, Concentric and Beck Technology.
Hi, I'm Steve DeLordo, founder and CEO of Concentric, the first holistic platform for pre-construction. As a former executive officer of one of the largest general contractors in the U.S., I have experienced firsthand the challenges the industry is facing, particularly in pre-construction. Pre-construction is still a highly manual and fractured collection of processes. Essential information is kept in ad hoc, scattered spreadsheets and documents, which really limits the understanding and hides the full picture of a project for all those involved. Concentric is here to change that. Our 360-degree platform unites data, workflows, and people. With Concentric, you and your team can access real-time insights and data, assess and mitigate risk to ensure a successful project outcome, and most importantly, unlock the enormous capacity of your talent and your data. To learn more about Concentric and to book a demo, head to our website, concentric.com. That's spelled concentric.com. Concentric, it's pre-construction recalibrated for the modern builder.
Clint Kimble, welcome to the Pre-Construction Podcast.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it. Look forward to talking to you.
Well, this podcast nearly didn't happen, folks. Me and Clint were talking football, or sorry, soccer, as you guys call it, for about 20 minutes there. So we're going to have to cut this about half an hour. But we're going to catch up in advance and pre-construction over a beer and discuss European football. So if anybody's going and wants to get involved in the discussion, I will happily send out an invite. So Clint, let's get down to work and professional. You are Pre-Construction Director and Diversity and Inclusion Council Member at Flinco. Looking forward to getting into this. There's probably four or five topics I want to get through. But before we do that, give us a quick intro, please.
Sure. Started my career working for a developer out of Canada in Las Vegas, and then flipped over from the owner side to the construction side. A good friend of mine offered me an opportunity to come worked for him. So after about a year of learning the pre-con side, he said, we're doing so well, we're going to hire either another pre-con guy or a full-time project manager. What do you want to be? And he didn't even finish the sentence. And I said, pre-con. That was in my blood. I wanted to do pre-con. It was something I enjoy. I was the kid that took apart the toaster as a kid, trying to figure out how it worked, put it back together. So I enjoy taking a project and trying to figure out how to put it together in the most efficient way possible. So that started my career in pre-con. I've been around the country in a couple different roles. Landed here at Flint Co. about 7.5 years ago and couldn't be happier.
Brilliant. And if anybody's going to advance in pre-construction and wants to catch up with a diverse, interesting guy, you're the man, Clint. It's interesting you say there you were given operations in pre-con. Even back then, pre-con would have been still considered a bit of a tough wicket, sitting in the corner crunching numbers. From then, obviously, you wanted to be involved at the beginning. Did you see the value that pre-con could give at that time?
Yeah, it's funny. We have this little debate internally with a cohort of mine here. We always argue what's more important. And he says, well, operations makes the money. And I said, you can't make money if I don't do my job. So I'm more important than you. So we have this little friendly debate. But the reality is you can't have a successful job if you don't have a successful pre-con effort to get the job, you know, set up properly with the, you know, everything covered and making sure that the project is ready to go.
Yeah, I would love the data on that as well. I would love to see the data on, we're going to go into a couple of projects in particular, that the longer you spend in pre-con, the better it is for the project, the safer it is, and the more money saved and the more money made as well. I would love to see the data on that. So you're at Flinco now. An interesting thing about Flinco that you kind of aired on me earlier was you guys are part of Alberici. I didn't know that. Tell me a little bit about that background.
So Flinco's been around since 1908. It's a family-owned company. The Flint family started the company actually as an oil and rig company in Tulsa. And after the third generation, they were kind of looking, the third generation of Flint family was looking to do something a little different. And so they quietly looked at, you know, selling the Flint Co. company off, and had multiple offers from different organizations. And what they're looking for was a similar culture fit. So Alberici had the most similar culture fit. And so there's a holding company that owns both Alberici and Flint Co. And so we're, you know, kind of sister companies, kind of brother sister, kind of, you know, not really a parent company, but so we share a lot of resources, which is great. They do a lot of industrial and more horizontal construction, and we're more vertical construction. So we like to say it's a 1 + 1 = 3, which is a good thing. So, you know, you take their expertise and our expertise, and we share resources on large projects, whether it's, you know, a joint venture in Mexico to build breweries for Constellation Brands, you know, billion-dollar projects or large government contracts, or even with our healthcare market. You know, we both have a strong healthcare resume, so it works out really well that we can share those resources and have that horsepower. You take two very strong, financially stable companies and put them together, you know, it makes it so there's nothing we can't tackle.
Yeah, and funny you mentioned the diversity of both companies and when you put them together. I was completely oblivious before kind of doing a little bit of research before this podcast. Yep. On your diversity as a company on Flinco. I mean, some of the projects and recent projects that you guys have delivered are massively impressive. The Art Museum being one and the Walmart project being two. Talk us a little bit about, because they're very different in their intricacies and their complexities. Talk us about, take us through both projects, and especially for you that has taken both projects through pre-con.
Sure. So I lead our office here in Arkansas. We have offices based in, obviously Tulsa was our original headquarters, Oklahoma City, Austin, San Antonio, Houston, Memphis, Denver, and here for the Flint Co. side. Leading the office here, we have the unique opportunity to do some really fun projects because we've got, you know, three Fortune 500 companies here. We've got Tyson Foods, which is, you know, Tyson Chicken and Jimmy Dean Sausage, everything else. They do a ton of different food. And then J.B. Hunt is the largest trucking company in North America, is based out of here. And then, of course, you may have heard of Walmart. This is their home office here in Bentonville. So that's not too far from my house in Bentonville as well. They recently decided to do a whole new campus, new project campus. So one of the things we were selected to do the build all 10 parking garages, which is about 14, let me rephrase that, 3.7 million square feet of parking surfaces over 14,700, I think it is, parking spaces. So I've built more parking garages in the last 2 years than I thought I'd ever do in my entire career. On top of that, we were selected to do the food hall, which has, I think it's either 11 or now 13 restaurants. Now that it's out of pre-con and coming up on being done, I don't, they've changed it around so many times, but it's a 100,000 square foot building with all those restaurants in it for the employees. And then kind of the jewel is the project that we just recently opened is the 360,000 plus square foot fitness center. It's a state-of-the-art CLT, mass timber and steel hybrid structure. And it's an incredible facility. So working on pre-con on all three of those, not necessarily simultaneously, but kind of concurrently, overlapping each other was definitely a challenge and interesting to say the least. We got to work with a wide range of architects and structural engineering firms and civil, same civil engineer, but it was definitely a challenge putting together. You know, the fitness center has three large pools. I don't remember how many tennis courts anymore. It's been a year or so since year and a half since I played in that, but it's like there's six outdoor tennis courts, pickleball courts. There's several basketball courts, indoor football or soccer field inside there as well. Racquetball, tennis, there's cryotherapy, children's play area, demonstration kitchen. I mean, it's gorgeous. If you see, there's some videos out there of the facility. It's really incredible working with the design teams and our trade partners, which, you know, I can't say enough. Our trade partners, we don't call them subcontractors, we call them trade partners because we can't be successful without them. So, you know, no one ever says my, you know, electrician was terrible, my concrete guy was terrible. They say my contractor was terrible, and we don't want that contractor, say Flintco. So we work really hard to develop those relationships and work with those folks to really, you know, perform on a job. So that was a really kind of unique project. You don't see those very often, building on an active campus with five other general contractors out there working on different various office buildings and child development centers and things like that. So it's been fun. Like I said, we're starting to wind down on our side of it. The first project that really opened for the public was the fitness center. So,
brilliant.
Yeah, it's been a lot.
On that, I mean, that's huge. I mean, you mentioned there the other GCs working on it. 350 acres to give somebody an idea of the scale. There's some great videos of it. I'm going to put one up on this in the show notes in this interview as well. It's on
sure.
It's on Instagram. And the one thing that stands out to me on the Instagram video, and again, it just kind of touches on the fitness and the food court, was the mass timber. Was that a prerequisite from Walmart, or was it something that you guys included in the design?
It was part of the original design. So there was some challenges with the mass timber. They built a new plant here in Arkansas, in central Arkansas, that had some challenges, which caused some delays on the office buildings. Mass timber industry is, you know, it's kind of a touchy subject for some people because the plant didn't go as planned. The plant has now been acquired by Mercer. So there was a delay. Our project at the fitness center was actually the only project on campus that received the mass timber from that plant. They redirected some of those panels to the fitness center instead of the office buildings. They weren't going to have enough to do the office building, so we're the only ones that actually have the southern yellow pine from that plant in Arkansas. The rest of those got delayed about a year for those office buildings, and they were they had to go procure their mass timber elsewhere. The food hall, we actually procured our mass timber through an alternate vendor as well. We looked at multiple different folks and ended up selecting Boggin Timbers to select to provide those for us. Known those guys for a good number of years. Worked with quite a few of the mass timber folks over the past few years trying to figure out the best way to kind of recover from that challenge that was had down there at that other facility. And that was a facility that was, I don't want to say it was purchased, but it was financially supported through Walmart. And, you know, this big, massive project that encouraged that facility to be built. And like I said, it's a little touchy, and I don't want to put myself in any kind of position where I get deposed for anything, because I don't know everything. I just hear stuff. We'll put it like that. So
it just shows you. It just shows you another challenge. You know what I mean? As you say, that was obviously put there for to get the mass timber. And talk to me about pre-con. I mean, we talked earlier about the length of time a project's in pre-con to the relative success of the project. How long were you in pre-con for that particular project with Walmart?
So on the Walmart stuff, they went through an interview process to select the GCs, and we got in at the SD level. Or more like DD level. So that one, you know, a lot of the design was already vetted and done. And then we had to do quite a bit of value engineering on that. There was the pricing that was done was pre-pandemic. And we got started in the middle of pandemic. So pricing changes were pretty evident. There's not a whole lot you could do about that. So there was a lot of sourcing of materials and things through, you know, early procurement, as well as through, you know, trying to figure out better means and methods. And working with the design teams in Walmart to get that done. We like to say cocktail napkin forward is where we shine. If we can get a job at cocktail napkin stage, which is just an idea and you sketch something on a napkin, that's where we do our best work. A lot of times there's, you know, owners or design teams want to get down the road first before we get involved. We've found that's been very successful. We've had a lot of architects say, you guys do this a little differently. Because we're not targeting their design. At the end of the day, the architect has a design. There's usually an element or two that are very special that they really want or unique for a different building or facility. And it's usually one of the more expensive items. So a lot of times GCs will typically come in and be like, we can be that item right there and save you a ton of money. Well, all you did was kill the design and, you know, blow up the architect's world. That's not our goal. Our goal is to work through what is the, we treat ourselves like an owner in the project. How we spend the money, what's the best use of the money, and if this is an element that is important to either the design team or the owner, we want to protect that element as much as possible. So I'll paraphrase somebody very well known around here, Miss Alice Walton, who said, you know, why are we spending front of house money on back of house areas? Don't do that. So when we were working on the museum, that was one of the kind of guiding principles for some of the stuff that we were doing is, you know, why are we spending gallery money or front of house money on back of house areas? We don't need to spend, you know, it doesn't have to be gallery level quality space for some of the back of house areas. So that's something we do on every project is, you know, there's the front facing, it's what the public sees, that's what's most important. Sometimes the back of house, maybe we can scale that back and, you know, really work with the design team to be the most efficient that we possibly can.
Brilliant. And I'm sure not only the design team, but the owner loves that attitude as well, because as you say, that's not always the way it works. And especially on the art museum, I mean, that it's pretty evident that that's what you guys do. I mean, it's absolutely stunning. And I'll put a couple of links up as well in the show notes if anybody's interested. But completely different to Walmart in its design, in its complexity. How different was it? I mean, and again, a different type of client. How different was pre-construction compared to the Walmart?
Well, that we got involved in basically just after cocktail napkin, like it was still watercolors and fun ideas. We spent about 4 years in pre-con. So that one went a long time, but we went through various elements of the project. It was, it started off with one area, then a different area, then what if we did this? What if we did that? We also have this expansion where, so it was a multi-phase kind of thing that we looked at and we ran cost models. I don't want to even tell you how many cost models we ran, but I've got a folder that's got 56 different folders within that, which have multiple estimates in there of different ideas and things that we ran so that, you know, we could end up where we are today. So the first 2 years was a lot of conceptual back and forth, different areas, finally settled on, okay, this is what we're going to do. We're expanding double the size of Crystal Bridges Museum with Moshe Softy and team. They're a great architect, really fantastic ideas and design ideas. Moshe's idea was that this whole Crystal Bridges from inception when it was originally built was that it was like a spaceship. He said a spaceship came and dropped this building into the forest and nothing was ever disturbed. And so that's been the kind of guiding principles of, you know, very scalpel precision-like demolition with even though we were blasting to get the rock out of the way so we could move the creek from one side of the little valley there to the other holler, as it's called here, from one side of the holler to the other, so we could start one of the buildings and then we had to put it back. All that was done with a lot of forethought and a lot of advanced coordination and things as well. So there was a lot of moving parts, and the team at Crystal Bridges was fantastic to work with. It's a project I can't wait to see it finish here in the next 2 years. It's a 200 year building, so it's an all concrete structure. It's big, thick, heavy, with mass timber beams and roof pieces, and I mean, it's got all kinds of crazy elements in it that, you know, you just wouldn't normally see. The roof structure alone it's basically a two rear roof structure. It's really incredible if you get a chance to come and see the building in its current state. And then as we're, you know, in the middle of construction, it's really unique and pretty fun.
Brilliant. Yeah, I'm sure they're going to be flocking to see that. And it sounds amazing. Talk to me now. I mean, they're two basically career projects. I mean, to be able to involve in both, to give us a conclusion now of lessons learned from both, what were the biggest lessons that you got or you took away from both? I mean, especially being in pre-con for 4 years on the Art Museum, that's incredible.
It's cliche to say almost, but communication. Yeah. Constant communication, meeting with the design team. Typically we'll meet with the design team and go through our budget before we present it to an owner. What that means is we're aligned. So when we present a budget, it's not Flintco presenting a budget to the architect and owner. It's Flintco and architecture team presenting a budget that we've agreed upon, that we understand. We're making a lot of assumptions. I like to say that pre-con is about 70%, you know, science and 20% magic. That 20% magic is where that's the secret sauce. That's the magic that needs to happen. So, you know, understanding the design intent, we sit through all the design meetings and review meetings with the ownership group as the designers presenting ideas. They're bouncing. A lot of times we're sitting in the corner. Like I say, I sit in the corner and just be quiet. I'm listening and learning. If 10 minutes of a 2 hour meeting is something that I grabbed onto and I know that element's going to be there, I can't price what I don't know. So knowing what is intention, the intention of the architect, understanding that and trying to budget accordingly makes a world of difference. It allows us to be very precise and accurate with our budgets. Historically, you know, out of this office and most of our offices, we are well above the average when it comes to our SD level budgets compared to bid day. You know, in our office here, we're typically about 2% off from an SD level budget to our bid day. So we're projecting what's the bid day cost, not what does it cost today, because that doesn't do anybody any good. So we're very well respected in our market for sure on being able to project accurately what the cost is going to be.
I'm just after hearing a couple of people gulp in their mouth, 2%.
Yes.
That's amazing. What are you putting that down to? Are you putting that down to obviously the people, huge amount of people. I mean, you're talking then about 70% science, 20-30% magic. And you're talking about, from what I see, is listening. My mom was right. Yeah. We've got 2 ears and one mouth for a reason. You got to listen twice as much. But the magic, the 30%, that's a lot of magic to take it out of technology, out of people's hands.
Yeah.
And also the collaboration thing. Sorry, is kind of three or four questions in one. the collaboration thing, was that purely people to people, or was there technology involved that made it much easier?
Both. A lot of person to person. COVID was really, it was hard on me because I like to sit and speak with people. When I see an architect present something, I'm watching the owner to check their reaction of, ooh, that's going to be awesome. We want, okay, well, I got to make sure that we're protecting that element, or if that's something they really want. The other part is I get to be the bearer of bad news sometimes and say, you know, unfortunately I can't be anything but honest and tell you that's out of budget. Or if that's something we want, here's how much it's going to cost more. And we're going to have to find other areas to save to get that element that you want. You know, it doesn't make me the most popular guy in the room, but it allows for me to be the most honest guy in the room. And, you know, I've got big shoulders. I'm not afraid to take my lumps and be like, oh, you're crazy. It's not going to cost that much. And I've had many a time had that happen. It's not going to cost that much. I said, well, that's our cost opinion. That's my professional cost opinion. That's what I think it's going to be. And then to see it come in on bid day. And when we open our bids, we open our bids with our owners and our architects in the room. So we do private bid openings with them. And as the bids are coming in, you know, it's like, oh, this element is this. And it's like, I typed in the number, it's on the screen for everybody to see, and it's kind of turned and be like, remember that conversation? And they're like, dang it. And I'm like, sorry, I didn't want to have to tell you that. But so it's a team approach. It really is. It's not me. I'm nothing special. It's my team, not only from our pre-con side, but our ownership and leadership side, as well as our operations. One of the unique things that we do is we involve our operations on it early on. There's not a superintendent or project manager out there that wants to build a job that I build the schedule for, because I'm going to build it like a pre-con guy and everything's sunshine and rainbows. And sure, you can build it out of sequence. Sure, it'll be fine. But those guys have to build it. So we get them involved early on. So we have our initial kickoff meeting and stuff, and then we start bringing in, you know, senior level project managers, superintendents, so that they're getting aware of the job. Typically, it's the person that's going to be on the job. So there's not a turnover meeting, which is unique. We don't have turnover meetings. We don't have bid day and then sit down for a day and go through the plans with our project teams and go through. That doesn't happen. They know the job. They're already involved. They help. We utilize them to build the schedules early on, so that, you know, our trade partners, when they're bidding the job, they get the schedule with their bid package. They know that this is the schedule. It wasn't built by pre-con and that the superintendent's going to get it and totally change things. It's built by the team that's going to be building the job. When we write our bid packages, you know, it's always who's going to do the condensate line? This is a fun one. Is it the HVAC guy or the plumbing guy? Who's going to run that condensate line? Well, some of our project teams like the HVAC guy to do it. Some like the plumber. Who am I to tell you how to run your job? How do you want it? Let's write it into whichever scope that you want so that people know what they're bidding. So it's our teams that really make the whole process work. It's like I said, I'm nothing without our teams. That's part of that magic that happens there. It's that 80% technology, 20% magic. That's where it comes from. It's that involving our teams and sitting through those meetings, understanding what the client wants, what the design team's trying to design. Because, I mean, let's be honest, architects design, they design to here, and the budget's here. You know, they're always pushing that envelope, and you know, it's my job to sit there and be like, oh, guys, sorry, but you know, that's what we do. That's where that magic comes from. It's in our teams and our approach to you know, what's the end goal? What's the final product supposed to look like?
Yeah, and that's the beauty of it. Once you come to a compromise, then it becomes much, much easier. And the quicker you come to a compromise, the better. But I'm hearing that more and more. Every time I interview someone on a high-level pre-construction person, they've got operations background, they're bringing operations on early, and they're bringing trade partners on early. So there's a common theme there. Now, slight deviation. One thing that I noticed, and I know it's close to your heart, is the diversity and inclusion within Flinco. You're a council member. Give me an idea of what you guys do, how you guys structure the council, and how you guys implement that on a day-to-day.
So we have council members from each office, and we get together once a month, and then and we have an annual meeting as well where we get together in person. So we do it virtually once a month, and we're looking at opportunities to engage, you know, outside the norm, you know, folks that have the ability to, you know, increase us, you know, the more diverse we are, the stronger we can be. And so bringing those unique elements, whether it's, you know, engaging folks from different nationalities, from different cultures and backgrounds to, you know, our, you know, the women in construction is a huge deal to us. Our female workforce is well above industry average. So we have a lot of women present in our company. They, you know, it's a different perspective, and it really helps to make us stronger. And, you know, we all have blind spots. You know, like I said, I think it's kind of funny. People look at me and, you know, I'm 6'5" white guy. Why am I on the diversity council with, you know, I actually grew up most of my life in California and part in Southern California. I actually speak fluent Spanish, lived in Mexico for a couple of years. So, you know, when the first time I showed up, people were like, why are you here? And start explaining some of my background, some of my history, and, you know, my love for the Latin people and Mexican people is they were just like, oh, I get it now. I actually got tagged to train corporate wide in different offices, our new safety program a few years ago. And it was a unique experience. And sitting there, we went through a company wide kind of change in philosophy from a you know, more of a authoritarian, everybody needs to be safe and do this to, hey, there's a reason you need to be safe. You know, put your safety glasses on, your kid's playing baseball this weekend. Don't you want to watch that? Isn't that more important to you? More of a culture of inclusion, of trying to get everybody to understand why it's important to be safe. You know, go home the way you came to work, because your family, you know, you may be the biggest jerk in the world, but your family still loves you. You know, there's somebody out there that loves you. So changing that culture of safety to that coupled with our diversity and inclusion, trying to make sure everybody's safe and bringing that together is a huge deal. So we look at different programs, Construction Inclusion Week. We're always looking at different things, activities to strengthen our teams. You know, everyone says, oh, we're a family. Well, we really try to be a family. We try to be, where everyone's working together. You know, in our office, we have a soccer team, football team that, you know, we have our Sunday league, which is always, for those of you who understand the Sunday league, it's not quite the Sunday league that you would think of in other places, but it's a lot of fun. Play indoor soccer and have a really good time with that. We have different activities to try to make sure everybody's got something beyond just what they go to work for. To, you know, the whole idea is that we're working together as a team.
Yeah, and that's really difficult, Clint, and really difficult to see. I can see other companies struggling with it, having that inclusion, that family feel, but you've got to almost bring it out a little bit into their personal lives with the social mm-hmm. soccer, with the social events, the social calendar, and everything becomes more open, more honest, and more collaborative.
Oh, absolutely.
And I love it, the soccer team. I take it you're a center half, being 6'5", or do they throw you in nets?
At my age, now that I'm over 50, I just, you know, I stay in the net. I've got a big wingspan, so I can cover a lot of area without having to move too much.
Right.
Every once in a while, I'll go play out on the pitch a little bit for about a minute and a half, and I'm like, okay, I'm gassed.
I would say that the head's still there, but the legs just don't move as quick.
No, it's not. We've got some young guys that are incredible, that are really good, so it's like, all right, go score.
Great fun.
Go.
Great.
Just go.
I love it. Well, listen, folks, you've heard Clint here now. You can see how open, how honest he is, how transparent. He's actually speaking in advance in pre-construction now. He's got two topics. The first one is high-quality training program within estimating and estimators. That one I will definitely be attending. And then there's another one, early procurement, which I'm sure that you're going to be kind of pulling on the experience of Walmart. I was going to go into them in detail, but just give us a quick high-level overview of both. What can we expect to hear in advancing?
So on training, I think that's key. Firm believer in training your replacement. There's people out there who don't want to have people come steal their job. I've told everybody in my department, come steal my job. I'm not doing my job if you're not trying to steal my job. I want to leave this better than the way I took it on. So training our guys, getting the opportunities. We recently, little plug for Beck here, we recently have engaged in the Destiny conversion. So we're making that switch as well. So being innovative and, you know, in technology and things is important. So we're always looking at that corporate wide for both companies. We have a technology Technology and Innovation Council. That's it. The TIC is what it's called. One of the guys here is on that council. So there's only five members from both Alberici and Flintco. And so one of the guys here is representing Flintco in that, which is fantastic. So they're evaluating all kinds of new technologies, whether it's, you know, like LIDEX, radar layout systems in the buildings, to pre-construction opportunities, working with Revit and Assemble, all kinds of different stuff. So there's a lot of that going on, a lot of training that happens with that. And then training these guys, not just to look at our folks, it's on paper, but what's on paper is not all the information. So our job is to be, you know, very accurate with our budgets with very little information. So at a 30% design, you got to be 100% accurate. That's a huge ask. So learning the basics, understanding that's training of all that is important. And then early procurement is something that, you know, we really, really, really work towards. Whether that's, you know, understanding the long lead items for projects, identifying those early, getting released on, you know, whether it's switchgear or generators, or in the case around here, sometimes it's crazy tile and stuff out of Italy, or at Crystal Bridges, it was tile pavers out of China, which was interesting because it was, they were shutting down the factory. Lots of interesting things. So you have to account for shipping of, I mean, it, take your pick. We do everything we can to avoid air shipping stuff on a rush. So lots of that stuff we'll be talking about, some of those things during the advancing pre-con. So.
Right. Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. I cannot wait. I think I'm going to grab you as well and go over a few topics while we're there, and we might grab a beer. Listen, Clint, yeah. This has been absolutely brilliant. I hope you got a little bit from it. I know our audience would have got loads from it. So I want to thank you for giving up your time.
No, I appreciate the opportunity to talk to you. It's been a year in the making, but I'm glad we're able to do this, and I look forward to seeing you in Denver.
Cannot wait.
Stuck in spreadsheets? Tired of the endless loop of copying and pasting? Now imagine all your estimating workflows in one program. Beck Technology's innovative Destiny Estimator software streamlines the entire estimating process. With intuitive tools and powerful analytics, you can create accurate and reliable estimates quickly and easily. We understand the challenges pre-con teams face because we were born from construction. When you are ready to streamline your estimating effort, visit us at beck-technology.com and talk with a tech expert in a Destiny Estimator demo today.
Well, folks, I hope you learned all about Flinko Alberici and the complexities of running two humongous projects through pre-construction at the same time. As Clint says, the details are below. The details to nominate an unsung hero for the free Advancing Pre-Construction ticket, the URL is below. I've also put Clint's, I was going to say email address, but no, let's put his LinkedIn profile. He's always more than happy to answer any questions. Thanks again as well, folks. I forgot to mention in my last podcast, I'm seeing a massive increase in members on the Pre-Construction Podcast on LinkedIn, on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you listen to your podcast. So that really does help me get more and more high quality guests on. So thank you.